7 is coming up and getting wired and set up. I forgot to mention at the beginning that it's possible that some of our attendees are recording the presentations, either audibly or visually. And if the speakers have an objection to that, would you please just request that the recording be turned off during your talk.
All right, can everyone hear me okay?
It's kind of easy.
Excellent. So, hi, my name is Evan Riley. I'm with Black & Veatch. I'll be presenting for Dr. Manali Joshi, who is unfortunately unable to be here today. The agenda that we're going to walk through is, it's on the screen, but it's our PAM file creation service, how we use test data, or how test data is captured, and then how we use it to create PAN files. We talk about data validation and curve fitting, and then we look at briefly what this means for uncertainty and energy production estimates. And we'll talk a little bit about challenges and limitations that we've had, and I'll try and leave some time for questions. So a brief history behind this service offering. 2 years ago, as Josh mentioned, we had a workshop at Sandia. And one of the primary takeaways from the workshop is that there was a large need within the industry for third-party validated module characterization files. And as you know, I think both Cliff and our colleague Menrel illustrated that there's limitations with this 6-parameter CEC model as well as the 13 or 14-parameter King/Sandia model, whether it be from a testing standpoint or a limitation on how low late irradiance is characterized. For whatever reason, there's limits there. So at the last conference, the last workshop, we decided that there needed to be some sort of third-party validation that could be plugged into a software program like PVSYST that's very flexible and lets you create your own module files. So after Black & Veatch left that workshop, what we did is we figured out, okay, well, this is something that we're going to do. We're going to provide that service offering. That's exactly what we do. So the process comes in two steps. One, the module's performance is characterized, and then two, we take that internally and we create the PAN file. So the reason that we do this is because developers and financiers do need third-party custom module characterizations. It's really to meet the needs that Bradley illustrated at the beginning of this workshop. Look, Borrego's a developer, they need to know which module's better than module A, or is module A better or module B better? And that's the need. So first, what we'll talk about is the data that we use to create these PAN files. And we use IEC 61853 module test data. So we do request, and we work with a variety of labs. We work a lot with PV Evolution Labs, but we also work with Intertech and other labs. So in the IEC 61853 standard, there's only a mandate for 3 samples, and we request 5. There's some sort of cost-benefit trade-off there, but that's how that's what we request if we're going to create a PAN file for a module supplier. In 61853, there's a amount of time specified that the module has to be exposed to irradiance. I think it's like 12 or 20 kilowatt hours or something of that nature. But we say, look, we just want a stabilized, we want the module to be stabilized before the 61853 measurements are taken. And then lastly, we request, and this is in line with 61853, 22 temperature and irradiance criteria. And typically, this is done indoors at AM 1.5. So what you end up with, and you can see it here, is really, and we'll get to this, but it's a variety of ISC, VOC, PMP, and a maximum power voltage at various temperatures and irradiances. So what you can do is you can take that and you end up with efficiency, specifically of maximum power, but of your other parameters as well, as a function of module temperature and irradiance. So you have a performance surface, if you will. And that's exactly what we're after. So we have a measured performance surface. So the first thing that we do is we take the data for all of the samples and we normalize it, and you'll see why we do that later. We also do some validation. And I believe this validation idea came from conversations with Ken Sauer at Yingli, but in theory, you know, ISC should be completely linear, or primarily linear, at least at AM 1.5, with irradiance. So if it's not linear with irradiance, you're likely having some sort of spectral problem or something else, and that means that perhaps your tests weren't done properly or there's a spectrum problem when you're testing. So that's just one example of a data quality check that we implement before we start to create PAN files. And there's other checks as well. So then what we do is we look at all five samples and we look at the standard deviation between the normalized efficiencies of all the samples. So each sample is going to have a slightly different maximum power. And that's fine, but because we've normalized it, we would expect all of them to be within the tolerance of the flash tester. So if you have, whatever, Aspire AAA class flash tester, you know what the uncertainty is, and if you're outside of that uncertainty range, you know, perhaps you think that you have a 300-watt module, but you have a 305-watt module. So that's another way to kind of clean data and make sure that you're working with what you think you're working with. The next step is we average all of the results together, and this is just a straight linear average of all five of the results, to get a typical performance surface, if you will. And that's really what you're looking at over here. This is a two-dimensional representation of a 3D surface, but if you imagine it, you know, you can kind of see it. Like the efficiency goes down as temperature goes up, and the efficiency also goes down a little bit as irradiance goes down. So you can see that surface. And that's exactly, that measured surface is exactly what we want to use in PVSYST when we're doing due diligence for our clients, or when we're supporting things like bond offerings, right? So what we have here, and this is something that we have in all of our reports, we have kind of the default PAN file for a specific module, and we have the measured data. So the blue lines that you're looking at, and again, think of it as a surface. It's the performance surface, the default performance surface within PVSYST, and this could be any surface, right, of your PAN file, and then we have the measured data. So what we now have to do is we have to figure out how to alter the base case PAN file to make it match the measured data. So the question is, what knobs do you have to turn? And the answer, the knobs that we use, is you can really turn all of them, but and that's because PVSYST is flexible enough to give you control with whatever knob you want. We primarily look at R-shunt, R-series, and the exponential parameter for shunt resistance. And we treat those then as curve fit parameters, and that's the point. We've said, look, although it says R-shunt in PVSYST, and although it says R-series, we're going to say, look, we don't actually care that it's called that. We can look at these as, you know, curve fit A, coefficient A, B, and C. And we're going to algorithmically vary those parameters in the effort to minimize the residuals between what the PVSYST characterized performance surface is and what our measured performance surface is through IEC 61853. So you can see what we're doing here is we're forcing the model, the PVSYST model, or whatever it is, the single diode model, to match the measured test data. And that's exactly, I mean, that's the goal. Once you get your model to replicate real data, you can say that, you know, to a certain degree of certainty, you have a validated model. So, and there's some, you know, special sauce here and there, things that we consider. For example, you care much more about the performance of the module at the knee at 800 watts per square meter and NOTC, because that's where your module is operating. And you can't remove residuals, right? We have a theoretical model that we're trying to empirically force into fitting measured data. So, you know, you can't get everything to match perfectly. So what we do is we give preference to areas where the modules are more likely to operate to help minimize. It's kind of like an irradiance-weighted residual almost, or an operator. We give weight to where the modules are actually going to be operating. So the question is then, what is the impact on energy production estimates? So it's well known that default PAN files typically underestimate performance in the low and intermediate light conditions. I think that's well understood, and you know, people are familiar with that, and I think Bradley from Borrego did a great job of showing that. The question is, well, if you now use what we call an optimized PAN file, there's probably a better word out there, but that means a PAN file that Black & Veatch has created, what's the difference? And the answer is, you know, between 2 and 5%, depending upon your location and temperature. And we've done some limited validation, and it's not published yet, with data that we have measured from the field. But I mean, what you've got is you've got IEC 61853 data. Now you have a model, and you know, you take that model and you implement it, and then you go and test it in the field. So it's kind of double validated. So we're very confident in these results. So briefly, some challenges and limitations. So what we're doing is we're selling a service, right? We're saying, look, you give us IEC 61853 data, we'll give you your third-party PAN file that matches the data. And we'll give you a report that explains how that file came to be. The problem is that the resistances are actually curve fit parameters. So from your 61853 report from TUV or whoever, it can say, well, the shunt resistance is 353 or whatever. And then someone opens up their PAN file and the shunt resistance is 6,022, right? Immediately, it's going to cause concern. So that's one of the concerns, is that a lot of the parameters that we use to minimize residuals, we take to not having physical meaning. So there's kind of, it's just a mismatch of nomenclature. Also, there's interdependencies within the single diode model, and I think the colleague from Enrol did a great job of explaining that. You can't have everything, right? This isn't just a pure empirical fit. We're trying to force a model to match measured data. And what that means is often you have to make compromises. You have to say, look, if I'm going to get a perfect match in this one region of a performance surface, you're going to have to give up something somewhere else. And I've got a couple slides here just to show that. I guess the slides to show that come in a minute. But after this, I'll show the slides where you can see kind of like the squeezing. But this is the results from Cliff, and I don't mean to get ahead of you, but this is data that Cliff sent us and we made a PAN file for. And you can see that when you use the base case, kind of like the default assumptions here in blue, you get a severe underrepresentation of performance, specifically in low light. In red, this is the measured data. And in green, this is the PAN file, or the performance surface, if you will, that we've created. And on the right here, I've provided some, I think these are root sum square errors in ISC, VOC, and maximum power as a function of irradiance and temperature. And this is, no, this is it. So you can see here that the error here at 600 watts per square meter and 65 degrees cell temperature, somewhere that you're not likely to be operating, is much higher than at 1,000 watts per square meter and 45 degrees cell temperature, or 600 watts per square meter and 45 degrees cell temperature. So we kind of choose to focus on minimizing these residuals here. And you know, you might look at these and say, well, you know, on an annual basis, it might mean that you're, you know, order of magnitude a tenth or two tenths or five tenths of a percent off. And our response to that always is, look, what we've done, the goal is to reduce uncertainty in solar production estimates, right, that are used for purchase and sale and financing of solar power projects. And we've taken something that may have been a dominant error when you're root sum squaring a whole bunch of uncorrelated errors in that production estimate together, and we've taken it from being significant to being insignificant. Now all of a sudden, your uncertainty in your solar production estimate, the chance of it being dominated by uncertainty in your module characterization goes from something like 70% down to almost zero. Now you're worried about things like irradiance uncertainty, and soiling uncertainty, things like that. So that's what we tell people when we give them PAN files. You don't have to worry about your module characterization file anymore. So a couple challenges and limitations. I mentioned the single diode models, interdependencies. There's some non-physical values. The temperature coefficient of maximum power is often treated as a fitting parameter. And I guess what I mean by that is once you have 61853 data, you have maximum power point data at different temperatures. You've implicitly defined your temperature coefficient. So that means that your temperature coefficient is not going to match your data sheet. You know, that's the whole point of this. The goal is to make the model match the test data. And if the test data doesn't match the data sheet, that's another conversation. But it's something to be aware of. And again, you know, there's some problems with VOC and how that's tied to the ideality factor. So this is a slide. This is synthetic data, but it's just an example. And you can see that once you have your 61853 data up in the top right, and that might come from a specific module that has a reported temperature coefficient of 0.451%. Well, after you fit it to minimize the residuals, you end up with a temperature coefficient that's different. So it's one of the concerns. Oops, I think I just lost it. Yeah, battery. So I'll finish up. So that's one of the concerns that we have and that we're working to address. But again, there's no simple solution because you're defining your temperature coefficient of power in your IEC 61853 data. So you can't have it match your module data sheet. Now, this is some work that Ken Sauer, who's presenting after me, did for the PBSC 38 in Austin, Texas. And the point of this slide is to show, thank you, Dan, that there is non-unique solutions to this PAM file problem, this module characterization file problem. So on the x-axis, we have our shunt, this is our shunt exponential, and on the y-axis, we have our shunt. And plotted in the heat map here is your root mean square error, or some measure of error. And you can see that there's not one solution, right? There's not one high or low point here. There's not one answer. So there's multiple solutions. But again, the goal is just to end up somewhere here in this dark area. And so long as you're in there, what you've done is you've taken something that could have been the dominant uncertainty in your energy production estimate and taken it from being significant to being insignificant. So I'm going to wrap up here to talk about future work and things that we see coming next. In summary, yeah, we have this PAM file service offering, which just turns IEC 61853 data into something that the Bradleys of the world can use on a day-to-day basis. So when Bradley said, which PAN file should I use? Well, the answer is the one from Black & Veatch. But what comes next? What comes next, and people are talking about it, but we do really need to dig into PVSYS6. I've already had a conversation with Andre about that and understand changes that he's made, and I'm looking forward to that presentation. But the next kind of low-hanging fruit here are incident angle modifier. If there was some sort of equivalent standard that we could point to and say, look, use that standard to measure incident angle modifier, and then you can input it into PVSYS, that's a low-hanging fruit. I know SunPower has done a lot of work in that realm. And then light diffuse degradation characterization, I mean, this is a really low-hanging fruit. Like, if you ask a whole bunch of people, what is LID? Well, you know, if it's multicrystalline silicon from Chinese, GCL poly, whatever, they're going to say, well, it's somewhere between 1 and 2%, or 0.5 and 2%. Well, you're talking about 1.5% of revenue, right? That's 1.5% of project value. Apply that to a 30-megawatt project, that's $100 million. I'm talking about $1.5 million. So, you know, cooking something like how do you characterize LID, in theory, if people are making conservative assumptions about LID on the order of magnitude of 1%, you could reduce the cost of a 30-megawatt project by $1 million. So these are what we see as coming next, and they're things that we're currently working on. Thank you. So I'll take questions.
We have time for one question while Ken is coming up. This gentleman over here, please.
Thank you. That's a very good presentation. Appreciate it. Greg Wolfson from SOMAS FMG. I just had a simple question about when you're curve fitting the parameters, do you have a hierarchy of those parameters that you go for first? Because while you've decoupled the physical reality in PVSYS and other simulation programs, they still use those parameters for string sizing or other things. And I'm just wondering if you choose or have some sort of a hierarchy in terms of the parameters you modify.
Yeah, so, and I could flip back to that slide and we can cover this a little bit later, but the goal is to minimize the total residual. So if you think about, on an energy production estimate, you have an hourly simulation, and associated with the hourly simulation would be bend irradiances and module temperatures. So now if you overlay those bend irradiances and module temperatures for your simulation in your location, and we don't do this, we have one data set that we use, you care much more about some of those irradiances and some of those module temperatures than others. So what we can then do is look at errors when you compare those two performance surfaces, or that one performance surface overlaid into the other. So this is your default pan performance surface in your 61853 characterization. The goal is to make that those residuals go to zero in the context of this kind of base, this assumed operational data set, this assumed set of irradiances and temperatures. So to answer your question, you know, are we moving VOC like way outside of the realm of real? No. Are we moving PNP way outside of the realm of real? No. Are we moving our shunt outside of the realm of real? Yes. But do you care so long as your curves match? I think the answer is no.
Okay, Danny, if it's quick.
Just one quick question. The 61853 matrix that you have shown has been generated using a pulse solar simulator, or you generated based on those three test data available from IEC 61215 PAN file.
So they were using indoor test equipment. Indoor solar simulators.
So those solar simulators, how did they get the low irradiance data? They were using some adjustment in voltage of the solar simulator? Or?
Yeah, you can't just reduce the voltage of the solar simulator because it changes your spectrum. So what you have to do is have some sort of a gradient system or some sort of filter applied to the front of it. You can't just turn the power down, otherwise it changes your spectrum. Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks again, Abby. Very good, thank you.